Welcome to the award-winning Doing Customer Experience Right podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Sherman, a professional global speaker and CX expert. This show is about action over theory, focusing on applying proven strategies to deepen customer relationships and increase loyalty as your competitive advantage. Besides achieving better human and business outcomes, each episode aims to elevate your professional and personal growth too. To continue learning, please subscribe to my newsletter at doingcxright.com. Today, I'm speaking to Tom Singer about practical strategies for deepening customer relationships beyond the shallow exchange on social media. We're breaking down how to build one-to-one connections founded on trust, accountability, and shared experiences, emphasizing the unmatched value of personal interaction over fleeting internet fame. You'll learn how to manage criticism online, not just for damage control, but also as a strategic tool for gleaning business insights. And you'll also learn how to foster a sense of community, mastering the art of active listening and applying the concrete strategies that have propelled brands to success. Take notes, as you're going to hear many how-to tips so you can turn every customer interaction into an opportunity to build lasting loyalty. Now, let's get started. Hello, Tom Singer. Welcome to the Doing CX Right show.
Hi, Stacey. Thanks for having me.
I am excited for this episode because we share in common some passion topics, which I'll save for a moment. But first, please tell the audience, who are you? What do you do for a living?
So my name's Tom Singer, and for the last 15 years, I've been a professional speaker on the topic of how do we build better human connections in a world where everyone's on their digital devices. I also am the CEO at the Austin Technology Council, which is a 32-year-old nonprofit in Austin, Texas, focusing on the growth of the tech industry.
What made you get into this field of work?
The speaking business came about because it was a passion, right? I had a background in sales and marketing. When you're in sales and marketing, you go to a lot of conferences. And I would sit in these hotel ballrooms and watch these speakers and think to myself, she or he has a better job than I do. So I started studying the business. I thought, do you have to be a celebrity? Do you have to have written a book? And it turned out there were a lot of people who were just smart business people who had gone out and done some things. And so I pursued the business. And in 2009, I went full time. And it's all I did until the pandemic hit, for what, 12 years until 11 years until 2020. That's all I did to earn a living was I would get on a plane, go give some speeches, get a check and go home to my wife and kids. In 2020, that got hit pretty bad. And in 2022, I joined the Austin Technology Council because my speaking business had not yet returned. And I have a real passion for the city of Austin. I've lived there 33 years. I was really involved in my career in sales and marketing in the tech culture and the tech scene. And so everything sort of lined up and the organization needed to be reinvented, and it needed to be reinvented around building more relationships. And so I was the right connection at the right time to fill that role.
Life is definitely timing. Speaking of timing, of fun fact I like to ask you, start with, if you could go back in time to your younger 20-year-old self, based on what you know today that you didn't know then, what would you tell younger Tom?
I would go back to when I was 21 years old, and I would tell young me, don't spend all the money that you won on the game show.
Ooh, say more.
So when I was 21 years old, I was a 5-day returning champion on the $25,000 pyramid with Dick Clark, the CBS morning game show that aired for, I don't know, like 50 years or something like that. And I was a 5-day returning champion. I won $20,000, a trip for two to Brazil, a sailboat and a stereo. And after paying the taxes on all the cash and prizes, I had about $13,000, which was a lot of money for a 21-year-old. And I had a great time, but it probably would have been smarter to have bought a condo or invested the money somehow.
Oh, that is an awesome answer. So glad I asked you. That's great. Well, let's get to the heart of the show. And I'm going to start off with, customer experience, doing it right, what does that even mean to you?
Well, you know, I mean, we always hear that the customer is always right. And I don't know if that's always true because sometimes customers are absolutely wrong. However, all opportunities in life come from people. And so the customer on the other side of the table or who comes into your store or whatever it is that you do, that's a person. And that person has their own stuff. They have their own good stuff going on in their life. They have their own bad stuff going on in their life. And we're living in an age where people feel invisible. And this has worked its way into the business world. Customers often don't feel seen or understood or heard. So I think that, you know, if we want to have a good customer experience, we have to be able to see, hear, and understand that customer.
So now you write and talk about building lasting relationships beyond likes, links, shares, and follows. I love that statement. What does this mean for business leaders listening right now?
Well, look at what's happened the past 15 years, right? We've had all of these social media tools, all of these mobile tools, all of these digital tools that have come in and really become pervasive in our lives. And first of all, these are wonderful tools. I've got my iPhone right here. I wouldn't give it up. You know, I wouldn't let you take it away. I think these tools are fantastic. I like social media. I like posting, you know, what I'm doing. I think it's interesting to see where your friends are and what they're doing. My family and I spent 10 days in Egypt over Christmas, and that became sort of a really big thing. It was going to be such a big trip that I decided every night I would post the pictures from that day. And about day five, I thought, am I a jerk just posting pictures of Cairo and Luxor or wherever I am? And the reality was, is that most of my friends were like, wow, they'd never been there. They found it really cool. So I like the tools. I like sharing. I like following other people. My daughter's a travel blogger. And so I'm always following her Instagram and seeing all the interesting things that she's writing about and places that she's going. However, for a lot of people, that's taken us back to where we can't necessarily relate to the human side. And so following someone on LinkedIn does not make them part of your network. It makes them someone who you have just followed on LinkedIn. And the same thing is true with all the other social media. So to me, it really comes down to we have to get back to the way things used to be, where relationships were from shared experiences. They were from building trust. They were from acting in an accountable way to do what you say you were going to do. They say that something like 60% of people under the age of 30 wish that they were internet influencers. But that's a broadcast. An internet influencer like a Kardashian or somebody like that, that is a broadcast of one to many. That's more like entertainment. That's more like going to the movies or whatever. It's not really having a one-to-one interaction with people and a one-to-one understanding of who is doing what. So I think that we have to remember that the two are not the same.
Did you see the HBO documentary that's called Fake Famous?
No, I don't think I did.
So I love that show. It was a movie. I wrote a blog article about it because it shows how people are trying to be famous, but it's really fake famous, and what they do to become that. And that is the opposite of what you're speaking of.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, we've always had fame, right? When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor or a comedian. You know, I think there's something to be said, you know, for people who want to go and do that. But I think in today's world, it's taken on a whole different level. And there's a lot of people who are just chasing fame and money for the sake of the fame and the money. But when it comes to our regular day-to-day interactions in business, it's not the same thing. Most of us will never have a large following. So, you know, we have to get back to, you know, creating customer relationships one-to-one. And how does the customer feel? You know, the old saying, I think it's Maya Angelou, you know, people will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And I think that that is a really important thing to remember, is that it's that one-to-one interaction that really causes those feelings that matter in human interaction.
Yes, absolutely. And my head goes to, we're talking about marketing right now, because this is getting eyeballs and traction and people to love your brand. So when we talk about that and experience and relationships, how do you meld that with the fact that there's marketing, there's customer experience, there's a blend? What's your view on how do you actually do that right? What can people really go do to build that human lasting relationship, knowing all this is going on?
Well, again, marketing is a one-to-many activity, right? Marketing grows brand awareness. Marketing puts your name out there. Then you have sales. And sales is really where you get people, you influence people to make the purchase and to become your customer. And so that's a very different thing than marketing. And a lot of people think, oh, sales and marketing are the same thing. They're very different tasks. I happen to have worked in both disciplines and they are extravagantly different in what they do. But once then you get to once you have the customer, then you have that customer experience or that customer service level. And that goes on to how are you making them feel, you know, going forward. So I think that we start broad with marketing and we move narrow when we get into sales and then customer experience. So we have to remember that there's a person on the other side of sales. There's a person on the other side of the customer experience. And if we remember that and we remember it's really a one-to-one situation, it's very different than when we're doing one-to-many. And when we talk about sort of, you know, fame and influence and TikTokers and YouTubers and all this, that's great that these people have huge followings and that these platforms have found out a way to compensate people for getting huge followings. But I don't know that in that case, they're necessarily building relationships with the people who are out there. They're not actually, you know, doing anything on a one-to-one basis. There's a couple of examples that would be the outliers to that. But I think for most part, it's just broadcast. And we have to remember when we're dealing with a customer experience, we're not broadcasting our ideas. We're really making sure that we're touching that one person in the correct manner.
Well, taking that a step further, a huge opportunity is that when people do put stuff on social media and others are commenting and giving thoughts, don't ignore that. In fact, engage in it and use it as feedback to, you know, drive your strategies. People fall short on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's all, you know, the social media strategy is an entirely a whole other topic. And it is true that if somebody leaves a comment, positive or negative, you need to engage with that person. If somebody leaves a negative comment, you know, you don't want to get just defensive and say, you're an idiot, you don't understand or whatever. You need to understand that they're coming at it for a reason. One of the things I do when I look for a restaurant, when my wife and I travel, if I go on to, you know, Yelp or whatever and look at restaurant reviews, I don't just read the 5-star reviews and I don't really read the 1-star reviews because if somebody leaves a 1-star review, they probably have a giant stick up their butt that day. But I want to read the 3- and 4-star reviews because they'll tell you sort of what it is. We tried a new restaurant the other day and it was between two restaurants we had seen. They were both referred by the same person. There was really no differentiator. And so we read the reviews and they both, one had a 4.3, one had a 4.6. Obviously the 4.6 sounded like a better thing. They both had lots of reviews. But we started reading the reviews and the only complaints were, well, they told us it was 20 minutes and it took 40. But everybody talked about the food as if it was some of the best food in that area of town. So it was like, well, those 3 and 4 reviews really clarified why people weren't giving it a 5. And it wasn't because of the quality of the food. It was because there was a long wait because it's a small restaurant. It was popular. Well, we were willing to wait. We didn't have anything to do that day. We were going to lunch. We were riding the subway to that side of town. We had 4 hours before we had to be back on this side of town when we were visiting the city. And so we didn't care if we had to wait. Now they told us it was going to be 20 minutes and it was 20 minutes. So I'd give them a 5-star review because everything went perfect and the food was great. But it's, you know, if somebody is leaving a 4- or 3-star review, the other thing I noticed was that restaurant was commenting. They were saying, oh, I'm really sorry that sometimes it's hard for us to know, you know, with so many people coming and because people, it's a Chinese food. So sometimes people stay at the table longer, they order more. All food was made fresh. So therefore, you know, things took a while when people would order. And they explained why sometimes things took longer. They didn't say, you know, screw you, suck it up, buttercup. But instead, you know, they engaged. So I think, you know, to answer your question, you can personally engage on social media when the comments are used. But when you're posting, again, that becomes that's a marketing post.
Exactly. I think it's important for people to understand that engaging, but also the customer service aspects of the comments. Don't ignore them because people are watching how you respond. And that could be, oh, an episode by itself. Let's talk about communities, because there's some companies that are doing it really well, leveraging communities And that's part of their branding. An example for me is Trader Joe's, where they created a community online, but then the customers created their own groups to talk about favorite products and experiences. I mean, what a dream for a brand. What's your take on communities and who's doing it right?
Well, first of all, my sort of motto as a speaker and my motto in running a trade association is community, collaboration, and conversations can solve all problems. I really believe that when we have that sense of community, it matters. And as I said earlier, in today's world, people feel lonelier and more disconnected than ever. And there are academic studies that have been done for nearly 50 years that check how people feel about connectedness and loneliness and things like that. And even before the pandemic, record numbers were being set of people who feel disconnected, not seen, and alone. And of course, in the last 4 years, those have just gone through the roof. So I think we have to remember that belonging is something that's on the inside of us. It's something that people want. We want to feel like we have our tribe or we have a kinship with some other people. And that can happen when connected to a brand. You know, certain people who, you know, if you remember the automobile, they don't make them anymore, Saturn. You know, it wasn't a high-end car. We weren't talking Lamborghini or even BMW level car. This was like a Chevy level car. And yet the people who had the car, they would drive to these meetups. I used to drive an old Mustang, and I feel community when I see somebody who drives, you know, a 66 Mustang, because I used to have a 66 Mustang. So I think that we can feel a kinship because of some of these brands. And where it's the best is where the people run with it. Harley Davidson is probably one of the best examples. I'm not a motorcycle person, but we certainly know the story of Harley Davidson was a struggling motorcycle brand. And then everything morphed when they sort of became this community. And I don't think that the company could have set out to create what they created as far as that sense of community. It was the people who saw it, and they'd see people and they'd see the kinship that, oh, this person had a Harley, I had a Harley. And they had sort of their own language, you know, around that. So yeah, I think there's tons of examples. Trader Joe's, you know, is a great one. I live in Austin, Texas, the early days of Whole Foods, before it was called Whole Paycheck and before Amazon owned it, was, you know, when Whole Foods had two stores that were in strip malls and all of their refrigerators were bought secondhand, so they didn't even match. The people who shopped at Whole Foods were looking for sort of that organic, fresh, healthy food thing. There was a whole sense of community that existed long before Whole Foods was what you all know it as.
Mm. So what can listeners do to create this community, this connection for where they work? I mean, they might be intimidated like, hey, I'm not Trader Joe's, I'm not Harley, but what can they do?
Well, I think part of it is you got to listen to people, and you've got to provide things that are interesting. So for the Austin Technology Council, you know, I write a weekly newsletter. Someone stopped me recently on the street and they go, oh, I really like the newsletter. Who did you hire to do it? And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm trying to rebuild the organization. We don't have money. I didn't hire anybody. And they go, well, somebody has to be writing the articles because they're really good. And I took that as a nice compliment. But what people like about them is everything is inclusive. I continuously write about how we want to hear the voice of the people in our community. Now, is everybody calling and emailing and texting me with their ideas for the future of the organization? No, but because I continuously put the message out there that we are a community organization first and a membership organization second, that I don't care if you're paying dues. If you're part of the tech community, I want to hear from you and you're welcome at our events. I think that that really gives people that sense of a vibe that they can get involved. Doesn't mean they all do, doesn't mean that they have to, but I've gone to the sense that I'm really seeking the grassroots leaders who want to take charge and want to have a say in the future. And I think we all have that desire as people that we want to be part of a grassroots movement. And the problem is if you don't open the door, nobody can get in to be those grassroots leaders. So I think the one thing that a company or any type of organization has to do is you have to let your constituencies know that what they say matters. Now, there have been a lot of examples of people who've done that and then they don't listen to what's said or whatever. So you also have to be accountable. If you say, I want to hear your voice, you then have to listen. You don't have to do everything everybody says, but you have to, if you're going to have an open door policy, you have to have an open door.
Yes. So consistency, commitment, to gathering that voice of the customer and doing something with it. And then obviously even the consistency of doing that with the employees and staff. One thing I want to add about community that I am just can't say this out loud enough is developing community even for your own staff. And where that's really worked, where I've worked, is in the contact center space, where the customer service agents, you know, it's a monotonous job. It's thankless sometimes. And so what we did was created a community for them to be able to go to each other for peer-to-peer support and education, not just the headquarters staff. Have you seen things like that where companies are embracing community for their employees?
Well, they dang well had better be, because, you know, we lived in this world where, you know, a couple of years ago, the big term was quiet quitting. During the pandemic, there were surveys that came out that said somewhere around like 50 or 60% of all employees said they would leave their employer if they had somewhere to go. So Gallup organization has done a study for 30 years that shows that if you have close friendships, community at work, if you have a best friend at work, you will stay at the company longer, you'll work harder, and you'll be more satisfied in your job. So if we want to have retention, and all companies had better be concerned about retention, because in the world we live in, you know, people are job hopping, you know, people are looking for ways to get into the gig economy so they don't have to answer to a boss. People are starting their own businesses. More people have become professional speakers in the last 5 years than probably all years combined that the industry has existed, you know, for 50 years, because people are looking for ways to be their own boss, do their own thing, get away from what they're doing. So if you're not creating that sense where there's community amongst your people, then your people are looking to leave. So, you know, I think that that's super important. And you do that by, again, you go back to that open door policy, you listen to your employees, you know, you don't be a dictator towards them. You allow people to have a say, to let them feel that they're seen. But it goes back to that word belonging again. People want to feel like they're part of something that's beyond themselves. And if you can provide a sense where people know they're making a difference and they believe and they trust the leadership in the company is going to be there for them and do the right things and be accountable to do what they say they're going to do for that community, then people are willing to roll up their sleeves, stay late, and get the work done.
Now, we're talking about feeling connected to a brand. How do you apply that when people are all over the world who might be a customer or an employee? Do you find that harder? Is it easier? What's your view?
So, well, we look at the way it is now with all this talk about remote work, right? Are people returning to the office? Are they going to work remote? Are they going to have hybrid? Well, first of all, we've had remote work for a long time and we've had international work for a long time. So people have been having distributed teams, whether they were going to an office in New York and going to an office in Berlin and going to an office in Tokyo, or now people working from home in all those locations, you're going to have cultural issues and harder to belong. So you need to build those close-knit connections where you can. Interestingly, one entrepreneur I know who runs a successful growing tech company during the pandemic had 250 employees. The company now has 500, but what they found during the pandemic was they couldn't relocate people to Austin, so they were hiring people remotely. Well, now the company has moved and the CEO is all about culture. So all of his other companies have been in office, building culture, lots of time together for the people. Unless they were sales in a territory, everyone worked in the headquarters office. Well, now he has 300 people working from home around the country, around the world. And so culture is a really important thing. So one of the things all of his CEO friends tell him, wow, you must be saving so much money because you don't have this office space for 500 people. He keeps a very small office space. And he said, what they don't realize is that in order to have culture, I have to bring everybody together every quarter. So he flies everyone in and they have a week-long meeting. They have the whole company meeting, they have department meetings, and they have team meetings, and then inter-team meetings, and puts them up in a nice hotel, may have offsites. So he's not saving money on rent. In fact, he says he's probably spending more money. But we build relationships through shared experiences. And a lot of people thought, oh, we can do this all over Zoom. But what they're finding is two things. One is that it's not working as much as people thought it would. Early on in the pandemic, you had these teams that were really close and they were able to be really productive on Zoom. And everybody said, see, look at that. Everybody can work remotely. The problem is that what they're finding in all the surveys now is it's not as effective. It's better than being on the phone. It's better than text, but it's nowhere near as effective as being in a face-to-face environment. So we build experiences, or we build relationships through shared experiences. So if people want to have that team feeling, they've got to find ways to get people together. And there's exceptions. There are companies out there who have great cultures who are fully remote, never bring people together. But those are the outliers. And one of the problems we have in our society is we champion the outlier and we think everyone can do it. Well, by definition, an outlier is an outlier, which means not everybody's going to be able to function that way. So I actually believe that there is a time and a place for bringing everybody together. And, you know, I think going to the office, you know, for some companies is still going to be part of it. And I talked to somebody who doesn't want to do that. And if their company brought them back, they'd quit. And I said, great, they'll hire somebody else. You know, the company will go on. It's been around 25 years. You've been there 4 years. You don't want to go to the office. They'll find somebody else. Other companies are going and finding ways to make the remote work thing work because that's what everybody wants to do. Awesome. I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer, but I think if you're not bringing people together, they're going to be more distant. Now, here's the other thing about Zoom. You and I are doing this recording over Zoom, but because you use the recording, I need to be looking at my camera. So, because when other people watch this, if I was looking at your face, I would be doing this, and this is what everybody would see the whole time I'm on camera. So we're on Zoom, but I'm not actually looking you in the eye because I have to look at my camera as the eye because you're going to utilize the video. So therefore, everybody goes, well, on Zoom, you can see people's face and facial expressions. My camera's really close to the box where your face is, but I can't look you in the eye, or we're not going to be able to have a successful video, if you will. So that just makes Zoom all the less, everybody thinks it's so great, but not if you're not looking at people in the face.
That's a fabulous example. I also want to say with Zoom is that, or any video, my favorite part of meetings are the ones right before or when it's over. Because we're having the conversation, it's almost like when you're in person and you take a bio break and you're talking in the hallway or in the restroom. That's what the Zoom is before and after. Stay on longer. Talk to people. It's the best part.
Well, I mean, the best part of live conferences, right? I've made my living speaking at live events. And now in my role with the association, I put on live events. And The best part of a live event is the hallway conversations. You can have the best speakers, you can have the best workshops. And people will tell you time after time, it was that serendipitous meeting in the hallway where they got the most value from the conference. And so, you know, I still believe that there's serendipity that happens when you bring people together, whether it's in person or in an electronic version.
Absolutely. And I, like you, I'm a speaker traveling everywhere and I feel exactly the same. It's the hallways and it's the sidebars that are just so meaningful. All right, coming down to the last minutes here. So rapid fire, what is the one takeaway that you want people to remember from this episode? What should they do?
I think the biggest thing I want people to remember is that people matter. And we live in this world where we're distracted by all kinds of video, all kinds of audio, all kinds of mobile, and we have our phones with us. Remember this, when you're with people and you're in a room, put your phone away and choose to be with that person and you'll be able to have a better connection. I don't know about you, but have you ever been in a conversation where you're talking to somebody and while you're talking to them, they're doing this?
Oh, it's infuriating.
You know, they're looking at their phone, you know, the whole time. So when someone does that, you say it's infuriating. I ask audiences, what do you think when you're talking to somebody and they're looking at their phone? People always scream out rude. And so I ask this question. If you're talking to somebody and they're distracted on Facebook or on email, on their phone, and you think it's rude, what do you call it when you do it to them? Because we all do it. I find myself doing it all the time. But if it's rude, if they do it to us, it's rude when we do it to them. It's not multitasking. It's not efficient just because you're the one doing it. So I always remind people that if you want to build a relationship and customer experience is about a relationship, if you're physically in the same place, put your electronics away. If you're with people, choose to be with the people.
Absolutely, especially if you're a boss, especially if you're a parent, especially, yes. And last question, what is the best leadership advice you've received or given that stands out?
Be present. I think it goes back to when you're with people, choose people. But I think nowadays, you know, I was in a meeting and I was observing and I was watching the leader giving advice or giving instructions to people. But the whole time they were on their phone, when it wasn't their turn to talk, they were on their email and they were doing things. And I think that people, you know, sense that. I think that people want to be seen. They want to feel they belong. And if you're distracted, then they don't feel they matter. So when you're, you know, in a leadership role, put that phone away. I mean, I think the best thing I've seen is companies that have gone to no phones in the conference room rules, so that when they have meetings, they do that. I was consulting with one law firm and they liked this idea because I had said it during my speech and the managing partner said it. And I go, okay, I go, do your meetings ever run long? And he goes, every meeting runs long. I go, if you're going to do no phones, you call the meeting for 30 minutes, that meeting has to end at 30 minutes because people have other things to do. They'll freak out if they're away from their phone for more than you set. And I go, so here's the deal. If you make the rule, no phones in the conference room. And if somebody has a sick child or somebody's about to close a deal, they can tell the leader of the meeting, hey, today I need to have my phone. But if that person does it every time, you start to realize a pattern. But there are exceptions to that. But the most interesting thing was that law firm told me later, the associates said, thank you, thank you, thank you. Not because they couldn't bring their phones, but because the rule was if a meeting is called for 30 minutes, it ends at 30 minutes. And the associates were like, God, we would have hour meetings that would go 3 hours. And now an hour meeting goes, you know, an hour and 3 minutes. I mean, they end pretty close to on time, or they take a break so that people can have a half hour to go check their phones and do other things. So I think that that's, you know, an important piece of advice is if you're the leader, set the example and leave your phone outside of the conference room.
Well, the present is a present. So all of us being present is just the best gift you can give someone. And thank you for the gift of you today. And I will share all about you and your links and ways people can get in touch with you in the show notes. And thank you for the gift of you.
Thank you. It's been fun to be here.
Thank you so much for joining today. I hope you will apply the lessons shared, and also requesting if you would leave a review on Apple would mean a lot. Head over to doingcxright.com to learn more ways to connect with me and improve your CX. Until next time, I'm Stacey Sherman, Doing CX Right.